Well, this could be interesting. It's the news. Go to me. Yeah. Good morning. It is Thursday already. Thursday, April 3rd. 9:54 a.m., I think. I'm not sure. All the clocks in my house are wrong. What does this say? Yeah, 9:54 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm at my home studio with soggy feet. There's a little, we got a little bit of wet basement thing going on here. Apparently got some moisture into the basement last night, or that, but I think it must have been last night because everything's flooded here. There's water standing everywhere. We must have gotten doused last night before I got home. I got home about a little after 2 o'clock in the morning this morning, and let's just say travel yesterday was quite challenging. In fact, my wife was supposed to be back from Boston yesterday. We're supposed to get into Chicago about the same time, and her flight was delayed. First of all, it was overbooked, of course, first. That's always an issue. And then it got delayed, and then delayed some more, and then delayed some more. And I don't know if everybody saw the weather system that was moving across the country last night. It just kept building and building and getting worse. It was all the way up into Canada, all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico. It was just a big line of stuff. And one of the things, it was, of course, there's a couple places where it just downpoured a lot of rain, which is good. We need rain. It's not a problem with that. But there were quite a few severe storms throughout the process. And, of course, anybody who had damage or has experienced any loss at all, heart goes out to them. But I was happy when I got home that didn't really have any big leaks. I had a few limbs down, just some limbs that needed to come down. But the rest of the house was rest of the property was pretty, I think. I haven't looked out back yet. I didn't really, at 2 in the morning, after driving for 3 hours, I wasn't really all that thrilled about going out and doing a survey. And I just got up a little bit ago. So I got the old breakfast thing done, and I got all this stuff done. I got to go pick up the cats here a little bit later. But in the meantime, I got myself some chai. So I have chai with my Almond Joy creamer. A backup cup this morning is interesting. I stopped at a McDonald's. It was the only thing open. I was just catching everything. I couldn't stop at Chick-fil-A. I did stop at Chick-fil-A. It was closed. Just missed it. And then I missed the Culver's. I stopped that as well, and I just missed that. That was just closed. So I ended up going to McDonald's. They were open because they love to see me smile. So I ended up getting that. They were a little bit grumpy, but I can understand that, at midnight. Actually, it was about 1 in the morning, I guess. Well, it was midnight their time because I was in the central time zone there. But by the time I got home, it was just after 2 o'clock, and it was just a very... late night. Went to sleep and then got up this morning about, I don't know what time it was. The clock said it was 10:40, but then I realized the clock was wrong because, power had gone out while we were gone. I ended up waking up about 7:30 or so this morning. So now it is 10 o'clock and I'm just now getting around to the show. But had a few other things to do this morning. Of course, I think that I should get out of bed until about 8:30. So here I am. We have a lot of things going on, a lot of stuff that has been happening. We had the Liberation Day that Donald Trump was talking about tariffs. I think we'll talk about tariffs today. So anyway, my backup cup is a half a cup of McDonald's sweet tea. It's actually not too bad. Sometimes it's a little overly sweet, occasionally. Not sure why. Sometimes McDonald's just makes it's a little bit too syrupy, I guess, or something. I don't know. It's just got too much of a. It's just a little too strong. This wasn't too bad. I think they put enough ice in it that it made it okay. So we have this tariff thing is kind of all in the news. Everybody's talking about it and how it's going to affect the economy. There's people, all kinds of people on both sides of the aisle. You've got Rand Paul, who's against the tariffs, thinks that it's going to be bad for the economy. You've got, you know, I normally appreciate Rand and Ron Paul when it comes to talking about economic things. However, in this case, I don't agree with their their analysis of the tariff situation. And I'm no expert in tariffonomy. I'm not running to it. If that's a thing. I'm not an expert in. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an economic advisor. I'm not a financial counselor. I'm just a guy with a bunch of opinions with a microphone. So just disclaimer. However, this issue with the tariffs, these people who are poo-pooing the idea of tariffs, I don't think that they've read his book, The Art of the Deal. I haven't either, but I haven't actually sat down and read it. All right, I'm not a reader. I like audiobooks. I have not listened to the audiobook either, but I have heard a lot of people comment. I've heard a lot of commentary on the book, and I've gathered up some. And I've read snippets here and there, and some quotes that are put into the book, and I understand the principles of what he goes by in this book. And I usually don't give that much credit. But when somebody tells me, "Well, I haven't read the book, but I've heard about it," well, I don't give much credibility to that. However, in this case, there are some things that are just informational books are a little bit different than that. It all kind of depends on what the source is and who the person is who read the book, because if they started with a presupposed opinion, I've heard that many times. Let's put it this way: the books that I have read, I've heard people make commentary on it, and it's been there's a book called The Seduction of Christianity. It was by David Hunt. It's back in the 80s, he wrote the book. Very controversial at the time. And I read it. I took notes in it. It had footnotes, all kinds of stuff. All the references were in there. And there was a book about how secular psychology, human psychology, was taking over the church and how it was forming this. And along with that book, there was kind of this other book that I used to listen to John Ankerberg a lot. Along with that book, there was another book called The Beautiful Side of Evil. I think it was Johanna Michelson. I think she wrote that book. And both of them, very good. They kind of went together. One of them was the kind of the seductive side of spirituality and how you can be fooled. You can be faked by demonic spirits that can pretend to heal people and do all kinds of things. And then there's the David Hunt thing was just a philosophical, more of a philosophy of human psychology being implemented in the church to manipulate people. Human psychology is basically, at its core, it's manipulation. It tries to manipulate a person into thinking differently. You understand what they're doing, then you can try to manipulate. There's nothing wrong with the study of man, which is what psychology is. You study man. You study how people think. It's more of a self-awareness kind of study. The problem comes in what you do with that information, how you go forward with helping people to go forward. If you're not bringing them closer to God in a relationship with God and the only one who really understands them and who created them, you can't just, because you have to pigeonhole people into a box. You have to say, well, this person is this type of personality. This person has that kind of issue. This is what we said before. We do ABC, and then we work with that. And it's kind of like people are robots, and you just have to know they're a machine, and you just plug in that's the essence, more or less, of human psychology in the treatment of people, is that they have different approaches, different people who've studied have different approaches. Different remedies for people's problems, whatever they are. And I'm not a psychologist. Of course I'm not. Of course. Why would I talk about something that I know something about? But this book is very, it covers all this stuff and kind of talks about it. And this guy was brilliant. I think he's still alive, actually. I'm having some issues this morning with my system here. I'm not sure exactly what's going on. It continues to it drops out. It's been dropping out, and I've had to go back and I've recorded probably half an hour of show that hasn't been. It's not anywhere. It's gone. It's disappeared. A little bit frustrating. So I mean, I'm not sure if I'm going to continue on with the same line of story and the same reasoning I was getting into. It's just kind of weird. I'm going to try something here for just a second. Bear with me. All right, I'm going to kind of see what happens here now with this. It's kind of frustrating. I may have to do something completely different. This tariff thing. Let's get back to that. This, the whole tariff thing. The art of the deal. That whole thing. There's power in the ability to negotiate and having all the tools on the table, showing everything that you possibly could do. And of course, now people have to call your bluff. And of course, when you put things on the table, like tariffs or whatever it is, you don't necessarily. One of the major things in this whole process of negotiation is that you have to be willing to use anything that you put on the table. And that includes the walk away. When it comes to buying a house, buying a car, buying anything, and you know, like I said, the value of something is only worth what it is, what it's worth to the two people who agree to it at that moment. In other words, there might be a car that says the market says it's worth $30,000. If you put it up on an auction and it only goes for $5,000, and that's all it's worth at that moment to the market that's there. There's nothing else you can do with that. That's what the market can afford at that moment, and that's all it's worth. Now you might turn around, buy the car for $5,000, and then you know, 30 days later you go to sell it again, and all of a sudden you get $25,000 for it. At that moment, it's worth $25,000. It's not. It's only worth what someone's willing to pay you for it. That's so the value. Where did the money? So you buy a car for $30,000, and the next week you can't sell it. And you wonder what's going on here. Well, the market only is willing to pay $5,000 for the car. Where did all that money go? Well, it's in the value of the car, and the car has lost its value. So what happens in the stock market when you invest in a company? And you have $500,000 invested in the stock market, and all of a sudden the stock market crashes because all these companies are losing value. Nobody's willing to pay to invest in those companies, so that company then is worth less than it was when you bought into it. That's where your money goes. Your money goes away in this mystical value of that company. The mysterious value of the company in a world where one man living in a land before time. That's what happens when you invest in something. And now you can invest in something that's not worth much. And you can, like Bitcoin back in the day, you could have bought, 10,000 Bitcoin for about $5 when it first came out. Wouldn't you have liked to have had that? I would have lost the key. I would have been that guy who lost $70 billion, in a trash heap somewhere because I threw out a thumb drive or something. But it's one of those things where you don't really can't put a value on something unless the value is there. So it's whatever the market will uphold. And you have to find the market sometimes. But you have to be willing to put all the things on the table. And tariffs are one of those things. When Trump negotiates a deal, whether it's this deal with the Ukraine war, the Israeli-Gaza situation, whatever it is, he's willing to negotiate these things. You have to put everything on the table. And you have to be willing to use whatever you put on the table. Because the other person needs to know that. Now, you might be reluctant to use anything else on the table, but you know that your next, if people know that you're going to put something on the table that you're not going to, they're going to call your bluff next time. That's just how that works. You're gonna end up being the guy who, they call your bluff. And everyone you do business with in the future you'll have a reputation at that point of he always puts that on the table, but he's never willing to do it. He always That's what the tariffs are all about. Now, what people don't realize and what the media has been screaming about is, oh, we're putting all these tariffs on. This is a tax for the American people. How does this work? So how does this balance the playing field? How does this balance the market? That's the really the big, I guess, the big key or the big trick to this whole thing. How does it balance the consumer? What happens to the consumer and the American worker? Those are two things that are in the same. As far as the middle class goes, the American worker is the American consumer. And I think whatever you do that can benefit that segment of the population, you're benefiting, you know, life in general in a country. I mean, it's been a country that's based on middle class wealth. And it is based on middle class wealth, by the way. The richest people in the world can't buy the entire middle class. They don't have enough money for that. There's much more wealth within the middle class than there is in the top 1%. But that you wouldn't know that based on, well, Bernie Sanders, everybody else tells you about the billionaires. Not millionaires and billionaires now, because he's a millionaire now. So he just talks about the millionaires and billionaires. Now he just talks about billionaires. Soon he'll be a billionaire now. Oh, I just had an important message just come through. A message about the cats. Oh, good. I've got more time than I thought. So we have this issue now, these tariffs. Now, what the media was ignorant about is they're picking on this whole thing, saying, "Oh, this is going to raise prices. This is going to cause. This is going to be hard on the consumer." No, it's not that way. Now, this one guy gets on. He's interviewed by somebody. I was a businessman, and I had to pay. I'm the one who pays the tariffs when we bring in stuff from Canada or wherever it is that you bring in these products from some other country. Well, that's the whole point. You know, I have to pass that along to my consumer. The consumer has to pay for that. I have to add that into the price of the good or whatever it is, the widget, whatever it is I'm importing. And that's the whole point. That now that product from China is now going to cost more. Right. And guess what? The people who have jobs here or who had jobs here building that widget, who got it taken away because they were undercut by cheap labor, slave labor basically, in China, all of a sudden, it's worth someone here in this country to build that product. Probably build it better. And guess what? Now, all of a sudden, you have a higher paying job because now you have a job that can build that widget because there's a market for it here in the United States because people are willing to pay for it. And guess what? You're the one who's able to pay for it because you can afford it because you have a better job. It's this thing where it involves a correction in our economy. It's not something that happens overnight. You have to put one foot in front of the other. By the way, the whole physics of walking, this fascinated me when I was, I loved physics, but I couldn't stand taking it in school because it was, I loved the process of doing stuff about, I was fascinated by physics. This is what I think is probably part of what's wrong with our school system and what. There were subjects I was fascinated by, I would have loved to have been a part of and learned something from and actually learned something. But because I didn't want to have to go through all the study and bookwork stuff that was involved in all the academic grading and the testing and all that other stuff, if I could have just learned, I just want to learn this stuff. I don't have to go through all this other. Well, but you have to study. You have to read the book in order to know. No, you don't. No, you. This is the kind of fascinating stuff I could have done all day long in school, and I felt like I learned something. Here's something for you. For those of you who went to school and took physics, did you remember this? Because I didn't take physics. I had an algebra teacher who happened to be also the physics teacher, and he just mentioned this one day in class, and I was like. He would just do this kind of stuff all the time. I could probably tell you 10 things he did during class that we talk. He would talk about physics occasionally, and it would fascinate me. One of the things he talked about was how the act of walking is actually you are falling forward and catching yourself with your feet. That is the act of walking. You are literally falling forward. If you didn't put your foot out, if you started leaning forward and you didn't put your foot out, you just fall on your face. But because you're putting your foot out and catching yourself, you're literally catching yourself and pushing yourself off to the next fall and catching yourself again until something catches your foot and you can't get your foot out in front of you, and then you end up on your face. It's happened to me a few times. And on the way down, I usually think about what he said in class that day. But the that's the act of, this is kind of the same thing with the economic trigger of tariffs. You have to start something to have the reaction that you need to catch up with it. This is all going to take time. It may take six. The correction, I think, will happen very quickly. And part of the reason I think it will happen quickly is because of the price of fuel, the price of energy will go down. The price of, there's a lot of things that are going to go down as this whole thing starts to spool up. And it needs to. The price of energy will go down. That will increase the economic situation in terms of our ability to afford certain things as we start to spool up the work economy. I think it's going to work. Now one of the other things that's happening here is in the process of these negotiations, like people like the countries like Canada, they're realizing, hey, we can't compete with this with them. They've been putting tariffs on us to get our products into their country. They've put tariffs on this. Australia is really bad about this. I for those of you who are listening from Australia, I don't think you guys realize how much you get taxed. There's something called a VAT tax. Value-added tax. I hope and pray that never comes to this country. Nancy Pelosi has tried, because Democrats have never met a tax they didn't like, and they have tried to get VAT taxes into the. They want to get a VAT tax. They want to get a federal sales tax. They've talked about this. This is on their agenda to pull out eventually. They're going to progress to this. This is why they call them the Progressive Party. And then they start screaming and squabbling about, oh, this is going to tax the common man out there. They don't care about the common man. Democrat Party doesn't care. They just filibustered. Cory Booker just filibustered that no tax on tips. Now, you don't get any more common than that. A common man who gets tips for what he does. And they want to keep taxing that. Well, it's going to ruin our economy. Oh, it's going to ruin our budget. I think the federal government can do just fine without tips if we'd stop blowing all the money on billions and billions. We got to stop Elon Musk. They actually believe on their side that they're going to that Elon Musk's goal in life is to get rid of Social Security. He's going to rip away your Social Security. They'll rip those checks away from you. That's what Elizabeth Warren just said. Rip them away. What is wrong with these people? They're not only just talking about fixing Social Security by getting rid of the fraud and waste. They're talking about not taxing it. Does that sound like somebody who wants to get rid of Social Security? The logic behind these people, and of course, they are standing up for these people who get shipped off to Venezuela or wherever it was, and Managua, Nicaragua. They get shipped off in an airplane. Oh, they got one guy who wasn't a Trinidad guy, whatever. He was an MS-13 guy. That was the problem there. Wrong gang. Sorry, got the gang confused there. Still a thug and still a guy who needs to go to prison. He's been on the run for a while. He's father of the year. Yeah. So the tariffs, strangely enough or interestingly enough, I really don't know what's going on with my recording system here. That's where the tariffs are. And of course, the left is, their heads pop off only because it's Donald Trump. That's really what it's about. Donald Trump wants to do something. We need to oppose it. They want to be on the opposite side of anything this guy proposes because they have to be seen as the anti-Trump person, the Spartacus that goes up there. Everybody on the left wants to be the guy who brings down Donald Trump. And it's just this thing with the Atlantic. Now, this other thing that's happening now is not only was there Signalgate, now there's another thing, this old Trende Aragua thing apparently is also part of what it was broken by the Atlantic. This story broke from the Atlantic, same Jeffries guy or whatever his name is. Same guy brought this whole thing out. They swept somebody up. They got too many people. They're reckless and careless, sweeping this guy up and sending him off. And of course, then they want names. This is the same thing. They do this all the time. Well, what kind of evidence do you have? What kind of we're not trying this thing in the court. We're not. You know, okay, let me back up here. Caroline Leavitt. She gets asked in an impromptu press conference out on the street. These reporters all around her, and they start asking her questions about the deportation of this guy who was supposedly Father of the Year. No, he wasn't. He wasn't Father of the Year. He was this guy who just happens to have, he brought his wife here illegally as well, happens to have a child here. And of course, now that makes him a father that they've deported. This guy's not just, even though he was convicted in 2019, and he actually snuck in here illegally during the last part of the Obama administration. But they're treating this guy as if he's, you know, he didn't need to bring him back. He's a, you know, contributor to our society, whatever. So, of course, you know, the president has every right to deport the guy. So they get rid of him. And of course, then the media stands up for this guy. They want him to turn the whole plane around with all these guys in it. Just call all these criminals in there. People who committed crimes. Here, illegally committed crimes. Get him out of here. So they want to claim, this guy has all kinds of claims with asylum and all kinds of stuff. And he hired a lawyer and got all lawyered up to try to keep from getting kicked out of the country. And in the process of all this, they come up with these wild stories. So they confront Caroline about all this stuff. And she's saying, no, this guy was, you know, he was committed crimes. He did this, did that. He was part of a gang. And this reporter starts getting, at least we don't have Jim Acosta doing this anymore. At least Jim Acosta, I got so tired of Jim Acosta last time President Trump was in office. And it was, he would sit back in the back and he would yell out these stupid questions, and it was all for the camera. It wasn't because he knew Trump couldn't hear him. He's out there yelling. It was all theater. He would yell questions. Mr. President, why did you do this? Why did you do that? Are you going to do this? Are you going to do that? It was all part of a narrative, and he would throw out stuff like that. And of course, the president couldn't even hear him, and he knew the president couldn't hear him. He was doing it for the camera. And the same thing is happening here. This guy, he starts getting on her about how, just because this guy had tattoos, it was this and it was that. Of course, now there are certain tattoos that you only get. And it's pretty good evidence that a person is a part of a gang if they have certain tattoos on their body. You know, the trademark tattoos that people get when they're in a gang. It's usually pretty clear evidence that you're probably in the gang, let alone the fact that there was a conviction where this guy was confessed to have been in a gang, MS-13. Now they're saying, oh, well, is there any evidence this guy was in a gang? Well, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter, gang or not. He can be deported. And that's period. It's just end of story. And we're not going to have a trial here on the street with Caroline Leavitt, and she's going to present you with, here's all the evidence. There's 8 criteria, and this is all the evidence, and this is this. That's not what this is about. But this guy's trying to make it look like we're going to have a court session right here on the street. But it makes him look good. It's good. It's good optics. Make it look like, oh yeah, you don't have any evidence. This is what the left does all the time. Oh, what? Where's the names of these people who are 150 years old? There's nobody that's 150 years old that's getting Social Security. Right? There isn't. There isn't anybody 150 years old that's getting Social Security. So where are the checks going? They'll say stuff like that. I just heard this the other day. Nobody who's 125 years old is getting Social Security checks. You're dang straight. There's nobody 125 years old getting Social Security checks. So where is the check going? Why is there? Well, we need to see names. What's the Social Security number? Where's the canceled checks? Let's see the canceled checks. This is the kind of insanity. And you start to confront them with it and would say, what do you mean you want evidence of this kind of stuff? It's all in the records here. Well, there's no way that record could be in there. There's no way. This is all baloney. They don't want to believe it. They just want to close their ears. Nah. I can't hear you. Close their eyes and just keep talking out of their mouth with nonsense. They don't want to have a conversation. They don't want to sit down and talk about it. It's just as soon as they hear it, the reaction is, oh, you're lying. That can't be. That's not possible. What happened to your little deal about the code, the COBOL code or whatever that was that they were talking about? Well, this is a code that was invented back in 1827, and that's what they're using, and that's why they're showing people that these people are so stupid. These little 19-year-olds. We were told initially that there was a bunch of kids, a bunch of 18, 19-year-old kids that were part of Doge's team. Elon Musk had these kids working, doing this Doge thing, and they had access to your Social Security number and your bank accounts and all this stuff. That's not the case at all. He just had his team on the other day. A lot of them have gray hair. All these guys are well into their 30s, 40s. The guy who's doing the Social Security fraud thing, he's definitely old. He's got to be in his 50s. And he was kind of taking over the show the other day. He had Elon Musk up on stage with him, and they were talking about it. And he didn't even let Elon speak really very much about it. He was talking about the number. He had a graph there showing the numbers of people who've the illegal immigrants who've gotten Social Security numbers. They get them in the mail from the government. They get issued a Social Security number. Now, once you have that is the primary form of identification in this country is a Social Security number. And once you have one, you can register for anything. You can register to vote. You can register for whatever you want to do. You can get loans. You can do all kinds of stuff once you get that done. Because they ask, when someone asks you for proof of citizenship, what do? You give them your birth certificate or you give them your Social Security number, your card. It's crazy like that. And these people, as soon as they hear something comes out of Trump's mouth, they just have to jump on the other side. And the hatred is just unbelievable. And there are a lot of people on the left, I would say that lean left or are the Democrats. And amazingly enough, Bill Maher, the one guy who just before the election hated Donald Trump, would have done anything to put anybody up against him to beat the guy, just to beat the guy. He didn't care who it was or how bad they were. As long as they could beat Donald Trump, it doesn't matter. But he just wanted to get Gavin Newsom in there, somebody who could just win. I don't care. The guy can win. Well, what do you like about him? I don't know. He's a winner. He can win. I don't care. Anything to beat Donald Trump. The end justifies the means here. And all of a sudden, Bill Maher gets invited to the White House. This is brilliant on Trump's part, in my opinion. This puts the guy in his place. All of a sudden, now he's not sitting back, across the room, lobbing stones at somebody. He's literally going to come face to face with this guy and get to ask him some questions. And he's going to, when people, it's interesting the way some people react. Kid Rock the other day was in the Oval Office. And he was talking about a song that he does on almost all of his concerts. And he said, I can't even mention the name of the song. And I'm not going to do that in this office. There's a sense of reverence there. A sense of, this is a sacred place. And I'm not saying sacred in the religious term. I'm not saying it is sacred to our country. It is important. It is a place of elevated respect. A place of authority. A place where there's no screwing around, goofing off. Now, there's no late night pizza with a cigar involving a cigar. That's not the kind of thing that should be happening in the Oval Office. So, it was very interesting to hear Kid Rock talk the way he said that. He was overcome with this sense of importance, a sense of respect for the office. I believe that will happen with Bill Maher. He will realize he's a very small man all of a sudden. And, in his world, he's the big man. He's the head of the show. He's the big man. He walks in, everybody laughs at all of his jokes, and he can play his crowd very well. All of a sudden, he's going to be confronted with the reality of this guy who he thinks is a monster, who's now offering him tea and offering him, whatever you want, coffee, whatever you want. And actually spends time with him, gives him his time. I guarantee you, and everybody who's met this guy, everybody who walks away, typically goes, okay, this guy's not so bad after all. And they change their tune. And he's already changing his tune, by the way. I don't think he's had the visit yet. And he's already changing his tune. He's already saying, well, I'm with Trump on that. A lot of it's the woke stuff. He just doesn't like the woke stuff, Bill Maher. So we'll see what happens with all that. It'll be interesting to see how that all unfolds. In the meantime, there's the crazy wackadoodles that, who are still out there protesting and doing all kinds of things. And of course, this gets back to the whole thing of protests and what really is accomplished during these protests. This is where I probably have the most aggravation, I guess, with some people. They go out there and they do these protests. They have these signs that they hold up, the little narratives, things they say, the spin that they put on everything, and just the lies that they tell. Hey, ho, ho, Elon Musk has got to go, whatever it is. There were supposedly government workers out protesting the other day. Now, you realize USAID is going away completely now. What they did during this whole thing with all these judges, these activist judges who are coming out and trying to stop the president from doing his job, they just decided, you know what, we can just dissolve, we can just completely shut down USAID and put everything into the State Department. And it, all of a sudden they're like, oh, that means we're all out of a job. Yeah. You guys want to act like little children? You want to act like 10-year-olds that think you deserve this job? They're fighting for their job, saying, oh, my job's important, and the country can't do without me. And I got to have this job. I deserve this job, and I'm supposed to have this job. This is my job. They're taking away my job. Yeah, that's the way it works in the real world out there. Yeah, there's cutbacks, and you lose your job. Doesn't matter what's level of scale you're on. There are people in management. They'll cut back. I had a job one time where I was a line worker in this factory. I was a factory line worker doing something on the line there. And I didn't know what was going on behind the scenes. There was all this political mess going on behind the scenes. The guy that I replaced was apparently, he had been pushing for more money, and he decided to leave because he wasn't getting what he thought he deserved. So they hired me in for like $5 an hour. At the time, it wasn't bad pay, but it wasn't, that guy was making like almost $11 an hour and wanted more. So he walked out the door. So they hired me and a couple of my buddies. And what I didn't know at the time was that behind the scenes, there was still all this, all of his buddies were still working there, of course, and they made me look bad. I didn't know that this was going on. Two of them were in charge of training me. So they kind of gave me just like half of what I needed to know. I had to figure the rest of it out. So in the meantime, it didn't look good for me. There were some things I wasn't doing right there. I didn't know I wasn't doing them right. I was just doing them. And most of it was the way the guy told me to do it, but it was all of a sudden I didn't know. I didn't know I wasn't doing it right. didn't know such and such, you know, certain things had to be done before that was done and all those, just different things. Like I had no idea. I kind of felt like I was the dummy, you know, I should have known that, I guess. And of course, eventually, because, you know, after being there for almost a year, I think maybe it was eight months. I think I was there. They were doing layoffs and I know the van department was slowing down. The motorhome department was also slowing down a little bit. So they put me on a layoff and I was like, there was a guy who just swept floors. That's all he did. He was just like a janitor sweeping floors. I was like, well, I could do that. Why am I losing my job? And that guy still got his. Now, granted, he was probably making minimum wage. He's probably making $3.25 an hour or something, whatever it was. But I needed a job. I would have done it for that. So I ended up going down to the unemployment office and filling out paperwork. And on my way back from the unemployment office, I ended up with a job. So I stopped in and got a job someplace else. That's just the way I was. I wasn't one to sit around and do anything. I would find a job. And if somebody wasn't going to hire me, I would make my own job. That's kind of the way it was. I was a very different individual now than I am now. I wouldn't do that now. Nobody wants to hire me. Okay, I'll just sit here. So I'm ready to retire. I think that's what it is. I'm ready to retire. I got too much to do around the house here. I just got to get done. I can't wait for retirement just because I got things piling up that need to be done. Hoping to get it done before I'm turned 70. So in the meantime, we have, where was I going with all that? I really don't know. Anyway, take a breath. Take a breath. Let's take a sip of McDonald's sweet tea and see what changes. Oh yeah, the whole world looks different now. Now we have this, some of the issues that are going on with this whole Doge thing. And the kind of protests that are happening and everything else that's going on out there and how they're, you know, they're the federal workers to think they're entitled. And people are getting tired of it. They're out there chanting in the streets, you know, ho, ho, he, he, or hey, hey, I think it's ho, ho, hey, hey. Federal workers have to stay. No, they don't. They don't have to stay. What are you talking about? People lose jobs all the time. And the point of this whole story that I was telling you there was, I was a higher paid employee. And yet this guy that was a janitor, all of a sudden he's got his job and I don't have mine. Now I found out about 4 or 5 months later that the original guy who they had let go, they didn't actually let him go. They let him go. He left on his own, but they let him go. And they hired him back. Apparently for the amount of money he wanted, which I think was like $12 or $13 an hour. Which I just thought was, you know, it's like, oh, what just happened here? That's when I started asking some questions and that's when I found out some things. And of course, one of my best friends, it was his dad who was the supervisor, the plant manager on that side of the division. He was kind of in the middle of the whole thing. He was actually the one negotiating with all this stuff going on. I didn't know anything about it. He never treated me poorly or anything. I was never had a problem with it, but he, it was a rather uncomfortable situation. Let's put it that way. Let it go, whatever it was, you know, whatever was going on there. It's above my pay grade. I was still a kid and I was probably 18 years old or something. I don't know. My life is kind of, I need to sit down and write down a timeline of all the stuff that happened to me because some of it gets kind of scrambled up and sort of, that happened before or after this or that or what did that? You got a job doing that? I had so many different jobs. I had 1 year where I had 5 different jobs. A couple of them I had at the same time. But back in the old days, you'd bounce around different trailer factories and do different things. And it was kind of just kind of that way. So there you go. We have lots of things to to mull over as we go throughout the rest of the week. We got tomorrow, tomorrow morning, I'm hoping to have some more, a little more insight, some audio, video of some things that are happening around the world. I still am kind of trying to work on this whole, topical Tuesday, wishy-washy Wednesday, thirsty Thursday. I don't know. We're going to do some things. I'm not sure what that's going to be, but we'll work it out and figure all that stuff out. In the meantime, I want to say thank you to all those loyal listeners out there. There's always this baseline. The numbers occasionally, the stats on the show, and there's always this certain number of individuals who always seem to be always listen, because it's always this. It goes down to a baseline of always right this certain number, and I appreciate that. That means there's occasionally it'll spike up once in a while. I don't know if that's because they push my podcast out on some kind of rotational promotion or something, probably, but it's. It probably might depend on the topic or something too, as well. I'm not sure if it's the SEO or what it is, but it's interesting to see that. And I do appreciate those of you who loyally listen every week or every day, whatever you're doing, or every night, whatever you're doing, wherever you are. God bless. Have a great rest of your week. See ya.